Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 164. Well, the international break is over. I'd say it was pretty successful, even if the competition was not very strong. Got a lot of positive things to say about that I'll talk about here in a few minutes. Going to talk a little bit as well about Bruno's remark to the press, clapping back at them after his remarks where Bruno said that there was no breath of fresh air with the team. Going to review Liga Bwin 26. We've got 8 matches left in both the first and second division and give you an update on those races in case you forgot these last 2 weeks. Also do the second division report, women's Liga report. We had a attendance record this weekend, over 27,000 watched the Derby and the Luge. Women's football continues to grow. And then we're going to end it at the very end like I always do. And I was so excited last week with my favorite team in the fifth tier, my hometown team of my parents in Arcos de Valdevez. Well, a bit of a disappointing result this weekend, and I'll again say that as the very last thing. For those that stick around that late to hear me talk about it. But let's just start off first reviewing the international break. And look, very successful. Portugal won their 2 matches, 10 goals scored, none conceded. Slovakia is in second place in the group with 4 points. Bosnia and Herzegovina, who in my opinion, I think is the second best team in this group. They lost to Slovakia, so they're in third place with 3 points. And Iceland, who's not the Iceland from Euro 2016, if you remember that great tournament they have and how they shocked the world. They beat up on Liechtenstein this weekend, and they're also tied in third place with Bosnia and Herzegovina with 3 points. But Portugal did what they had to do. 2 wins, convincing wins. It was great to see, like I said last week, Cristiano Ronaldo smiling, continuing to score for Portugal. I have people that say to me, you know, I think, should Cristiano Ronaldo still be a part of his squad? He's old, he's this, he's that. Look, if you are interested in winning, okay, and you are interested in basically winning championships, and let's not forget, he's been a factor in 2 titles. I still think the Nations League is a good title to win, but look, he still scores. And in my opinion, when it comes to him as at his position, he's still one of the best in Europe. A lot of people want to move on with the future. The only thing I'm scared about with the future is that it's not 100% certain that a player like Gonçalo Ramos, a player like Rafael Leão, whoever they're going to put up front, we're not entirely sure if they are going to be 100% the answer because you're pretty much testing it out. I mean, I get it. Gonçalo Ramos, hat trick at the World Cup. I get it and all that. But I think Roberto Martinez, he kind of said it. When you have a player like Cristiano, you know, you got to give him an opportunity. So I'm not in that camp of people that's ready to throw him to the curb, ready to throw him to the side, regardless of what you think of him. I think he had a very successful break. And I still think there's an opportunity for him to contribute. The biggest question with Cristiano is if Roberto Martinez goes to him and say, look, Cristiano, you obviously still contribute, but I think something's not there that you had 5, 6 years ago, and I want to start bringing you off the bench or maybe not necessarily putting you in the starting 11. He needs to have a conversation with Cristiano and make sure they're both on the same page so that if Cristiano all of a sudden gets substituted and he starts to pout as he walks off the field, we can't have that anymore. So you would need to have that conversation with Cristiano. And I think depending on that conversation, whether Cristiano is willing to, like he will say, team first player, then you keep him. But if you sense any hesitancy and you sense that not letting him play every all 90 minutes or not letting him get the start, then you have to think about it. But that's a conversation Roberto Martinez, he knew coming into this job that this is something that eventually he's going to have to deal with if he plans on being with Portugal in the long term, especially for the next World Cup. But I think for now, based on what we saw, it looks like the group for now, Portugal is going to be in total control of it. I see no reason to keep calling Cristiano. But I do agree that eventually we need to give the younger players an opportunity to score, and we'll see. I like to see these young players play against Iceland, you know, not necessarily against the Liechtenstein or, you know, Luxembourg. Luxembourg turned out to be easier than I thought this past weekend. But I would eventually, yes, during this group stage, I think Cristiano should not play, and I think they should test these kids out, and let's see how it goes. But the more we win, the bigger we take control of this group, the bigger we can try some of these new ideas with Cristiano and the new players. And I think that's why it's important once we start getting into June. And in June, we're going to be playing Bosnia and Herzegovina. Again, I think one of the better teams in this group. And then we're going to be going to Iceland. So I think we're going to be tested. If we win these two matches and we're in control of the group, then I think we have the room to start making some changes. So I am not entirely ready yet to give up on Cristiano Ronaldo, but there needs to be that conversation with him by Martinez that he strictly understands that things could change in the future, and I think that's going to be very important. Roberto Martinez has never lost a Euro qualifying match. I think it's like 12 or 13 matches. Obviously, some of these were with Belgium. Hey, a win is a win. I don't care, but look, 10 goals scored, even if it was against weak competition. Pretty stress. There was no stress. We easily took care of business, and I think we got a lot to be good about. So I like what he's doing with the 3-4-3. I think so far we have to be very, very happy with what he does. Bruno Fernandes' remarks about, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo had said a few days prior that it's a breath of fresh air with Roberto Martinez. Bruno came out later and basically said, no, there is no breath of fresh air. It's just a new manager, a new dynamic. Here's the thing that came to my mind when I heard that. And that was, did he know that 3 days before Cristiano said breath of fresh air? Now, I didn't get a chance to see the whole interview, but that's the thing that really came to my mind about whether or not Bruno knew that Cristiano had said that. I mean, look, me and you, especially if you're listening to this podcast, we're going to read the news. We're going to watch the interviews. We're going to watch the videos, wherever they may be, whether it's on Twitter or other social media like YouTube. I don't think these players are attuned to the press. I mean, I bet you many of them have throwaway accounts where they do follow the press. Maybe not necessarily on their official accounts, but I'm pretty sure they have their own, quote, separate accounts. But I don't think a lot of these players, maybe they do on Instagram, but when it comes to Twitter and all this other stuff, I don't know. I don't know if the players are following the news the way we do every day. And I just wonder, in Bruno saying that, did he know entirely or did he forget that Cristiano had made the opposite remarks a few days later? And look, Bruno, this is not the first time that he's clapped back at the press. I remember he did that last year, if you remember, during one of the international breaks when there was video of him going into the locker room, the clubhouse, whatever you call it in your part of the world. And Cristiano, I think, said a joke to him because he had arrived late. You know, what was it? And I think Bruno kind of came across as not really paying attention to Cristiano. And a lot of people in the English press took it the wrong way. And I remember Bruno kind of coming out against the press about their thoughts and telling them that, you know, they read into it too much. Look, Bruno's a big-time player. He plays for one of the biggest clubs in the world. He plays for one of the biggest national teams in the world. And he's a great player, and he attracts a lot of attention. And I think for me, I just wonder whether or not he knew that Cristiano had said that, because I can't help but wonder if he did know that Cristiano did say that, would he have said exactly the way he said it? Again, if I'm wrong, I don't remember in the Flash interview whether or not they mentioned Cristiano in the interview, so please correct me. But I just can't imagine him jumping out and saying that. And again, that's just, you know, my opinion. But look, as far as the press goes, you know, he talked about how the press in Portugal with the clubs is very poisonous, very, you know, it's just very toxic. And it is. It's just the way it goes. You know, everybody knows what, you know, what they talk about with Osogo, with Porto, Benfica with the Bola, and Sporting with Record. It's just the way it is. But I will say this. So if they want to solve the Portuguese press, here's a funny thing for you. Whoever does the Europa League account, the official Europa League account with UEFA, the newspapers need to hire whoever that is, because I think it's a João Mário, you know, Zé, Alberto, or maybe it's a Maria, Rosa, Cristina that's working there. Because have you seen the Europa League tweets in the last 2 weeks. There's so much Portuguese content on it. I feel like every day I'm retweeting 2 to 4 items a day. You know, if you're Portuguese and you're in a newspaper and you want to bring in somebody with a fresh perspective, I say get the enthusiastic person that's tweeting the UEFA Europa League account, because they are constantly always putting positive news about the Portuguese on their Twitter feed. And let me just say, I'm very proud to say, I've seen the base at the UEFA headquarters where these individuals work. It's sort of right out of Silicon Valley, where everybody's got their own bunch of computers in a big, large room with TVs all over the place. I'm telling you, there's somebody either from Portugal or there's somebody who's a big Portuguese fan, because they should be an editor in Portugal, because they are constantly churning out talent in their Europa League account. Not so much the Champions League, but I don't know what is that with the Europa League account, but I got to mention that as a kind of a side point. The other thing I want to also say to wrap up the national team, I know there was some controversy over the first match in Alvalade where João Mário was booed by fans when he entered the match. And the union, player union, came out. I think João Paulinho came out in defense. The thought process was, this is the national team. This is representing Portugal. Everybody should be all on it. But look, we know the rivalries in Portugal. We know a lot of people at Sporting are upset that João Mário left, and now he's having a lot of success with Benfica. But I think fans are going to be fans, and I don't think you could stop it. And you could come out and condemn it. You could come out and say it's wrong. I'm sorry. It's going to happen again in the future whenever somebody makes the crosstown move or the move from one rival to the other. It's just the way it is. Fans are just never going to change. So I thought the criticism of it, I kind of understand defending João Mário, although I have a feeling João Mário doesn't really care. But at the end of the day, this is a situation where, you know, it's not going to change. You have to do your job and act like you're interested, but I just don't see a lot of things changing with it. So those are my remarks on the international break. Very, very positive one. And now, of course, we go into a bit of a break with the Liga B win, you know, and the Taça de Portugal still to play. And then once we get to the middle of June, we'll begin with two matches, with Portugal playing against Bosnia-Herzegovina and then playing against Iceland. And obviously those two matches, in my opinion, are going to be a little bit tougher than what we just had last week. Let's get moving here, talking about the Liga B win report. Of course, 8 matches left in the season. My biggest thing with the Liga B win, and the thing that I kind of worry about with the Liga B win, well, first of all, we have 8 matches, like I said, left. I think Benfica is in total control right now. I think Porto needs a real miracle to get back into it. But this weekend, basically the action of this weekend, you got, first off, on Friday, the day I dropped this episode, you got Estoril taking on Gil Vicente. Then you've got Vizela on Saturday taking on Casa Pia. That's a good match because you're talking about you got a team in 10th place in Vizela, and you've got Casa Pia still battling for 5th place. So that's a pretty good match to start it off. Then you got Guimarães, who is currently the 5th place team and the owner right now of the last European spot in terms of being in the lead for it. They're going to be playing Passos de Ferreira. Passos playing a little bit better lately these last few weeks, but still a lot of work to do, which I'll explain here in a minute. And then Saturday night, Sporting will be the first of the big three in action, taking on last place Santa Clara. And Santa Clara is in real big trouble. And the last thing they want to be doing this weekend is playing a big three, but that is the destiny that they have been dealt this weekend. And then on Sunday, we've got 4 matches. You got 2 of them at 15:30. You've got Chaves against Braga. Braga expecting over 2,000 supporters to be making the trip to Trás-os-Montes. That's going to be a very good match. Of course, Braga, as you know, currently in 3rd place. You've got Marítimo, 2nd to last place, taking on Boa Vista. Boa Vista having a decent season in the middle of the pack with Petit. But, of course, you've got Rio Ave. And then it wraps up on Sunday night, Porto. You probably saw the headlines in Ojogo, looking to make it 5 years in a row, scoring at least 100 goals. And they'll be playing Portimonense. And by the way, brace yourself. There's going to be a lot of conspiracy theories this weekend, especially if Porto score a lot of goals against Portimonense. We know the stories about how many deals have been done between the two clubs, and everybody still remembers, I think it was last year when Portimonense lost in the Dragon. I think it was, 6-7 There's always conspiracy theories. That's for you to figure out, not me. But obviously, don't be surprised to see some of that, depending on the result on Sunday night. Benfica plays also on Sunday. They're going to be at Rio Ave. This is my best match of the weekend. Well, I got two matches, but the first one, I think, is Benfica going up to Rio Ave. Rio Ave in eighth place, obviously having a very good year after coming back last year in promotion after 1 year in the second division. Benfica, again, you probably have heard about it. The last two international breaks, they have basically slipped up their first match after the international break. This is a very dangerous match. Rio Ave has already had a good positive result at home against Porto. So this is a very, very tough match for Benfica. They win, they're going to a very good mood with the fact that they host Porto next Friday, and I'll have a brief preview about that. But if Benfica loses, then I think Schmidt needs to do a better job of getting his team ready after the break, because it would have been the third break this year where Benfica drops points, but we'll see what happens. And then everything wraps up on Monday. Fama, Familiacão, at home against the Roca, which is in a very good battle with Casapia and Vitória Guimarães for that last European spot, or whomever finishes in fifth place. But I think this weekend, the best match, I think, in my opinion, is Rio Ave and Benfica. And again, there's no great matches this weekend, but then next week things change. And obviously next Friday, we're going to, of course, have the Clásico. And by the way, next week, don't forget, it's Easter. So next week we have matches on Friday. We'll have three matches on Friday, Good Friday. You've got Santa Clara, Vizela, and then you'll have Benfica, Porto, and Boavista, Vitória, Guimarães. So three very good matches for week 27 next week. And I got plenty of time to talk about that. And you only have, if I'm looking at this correctly, one match, Casapia Sporting, if I'm reading this correct. Let me double check something here. Pardon the external noise here. But basically, yeah. So next Sunday, Easter, we do have a match. Usually you don't see that. With Casapia at home to Sporting, two matches in the Lisbon area. So, yeah, there is a match on Easter next week. But obviously the pay attention match is going to be Benfica-Porto. Look, here's my early preview. I'll talk more about it next week. It's very simple for Benfica. They win, okay, then you could pretty much start making plans to celebrate in the March to Pumball. I don't really see how with a 13-point lead, seven matches left, I think it's going to be pretty obvious. And if you're Porto at this point, you're really working for a second place. I mean, and just to refresh your memory, Benfica 68 points, Porto 58 points at second place, Braga in third with 56 points. They're only 2 points behind Porto, okay? And then you got Sporting, who, by the way, play next Wednesday in a match to make up against Gil Vicente. At Gil Vicente, they still have a match to make up. Sporting win that match on this weekend, and they win it on Wednesday, they will automatically only be 3 points behind Braga if Sporting takes care of business. So if you're Porto, you want to win this match to keep your first place hopes alive. But at the same time, you got to look behind you, because if you lose, you're going to be in big trouble, especially if Braga manages, to take care of business. And Braga next week, by the way, plays, let me look at it here. They're home against Estoril. So if you're Porto, that's a dangerous match, because you're only 2 points in front of Braga. You got to go and play your fierce rival. Meanwhile, Braga is going to have it easy in a certain way. They've got to play 15th place Estoril. So if you're Porto, you got a lot riding on. You know, they'll probably win easily this weekend. But then next Friday, it is going to be such an important match. And one thing, by the way, we've got a bunch of players on Porto and Benfica this weekend that have to watch themselves. If they get a yellow, they will miss the Clásico next Friday. You got Florentino on Benfica. So if he gets a yellow this weekend, he is out. If he gets one at Rio Ave, be curious to see, by the way, if Schmidt will play him. manager's always going to say, of course we're going to play everybody. It's about the next match. But I'd be curious to see if he guards him for the Porto match. Porto have more players in risk danger. They've got Gudjic, their defender, of course, Pep, Wendell, Tereme, and Galeno. All very influential players, especially Galeno and Tereme. Tereme, of course, had a very good international break with Iran. So we'll see. Galeno, I got to check Galeno because let me see something this weekend. Galeno. I know they're talking about Galeno, but I think Galeno has no, he's actually in good shape. I'm sorry. He's actually in good shape. So basically this weekend you have basically five players. You've got Florentino on Benfica, and you've got Gudjic, Pep, Wendell, Tereme, and Galeno that are in yellow card danger. And by the way, Cosicón's going to be asked, do you rest any of these players getting ready for the Clásico on Friday? I bet you he says, no, it's about the next match. We play to win. We go all out, and then we worry about the next match later. Just pay attention to see if he says that when he does his, when they talk next to the press. I believe he is back talking to the press. I know before the break he wasn't. I believe he will be back, but I guess we'll find out about that soon enough. By the way, one thing back to the national team I wanted to mention. The Portugal-Liechtenstein match, check this out. I apologize that I didn't bring this up during when I was talking about Portugal. You know how many people watched Portugal-Liechtenstein in Portugal on RTP1? 4.1 million. That's practically 40% of the Portuguese population. And by the way, that doesn't count us immigrants in France, Switzerland, England, Canada, USA, Australia. So Portugal played Liechtenstein. And you got to figure with the international audience that they had at least over 5-6 million. That is not bad, by the way, people. That is not that bad, by the way, for when we start talking about television viewership. That is really not that bad at all. Anyway, I'm going to move on now to the second division report. Moreirense still in control with 59 points. Estrela Amadurid with 46. Feirense from the Algarve with 45. And Académico Viseu with 42. Last place at the bottom and in trouble, you got Trofense with 20. Covilha with 21. And Bissad with 23. Nacional, who's, by the way, in the Taça de Portugal semifinals, which will be coming up soon next month in April. They're in 15th place, but they are 5 points above the 16th place team, Bissau. Things getting a little bit interesting down there. This weekend, you've got four matches on Saturday. It starts with Trofense and Feirense from the Algarve. Then you got Mafra and Benfica B. Then you got Moreirense taking on Feirense from Santa Maria de Feira, and then you've got Oliveirense against Tondela. Then you've got four matches on a Sunday. The one that sticks out for me, as if you follow this, is obviously Turiense from Torres Vedras, my team in the second division. They're going to be playing at Bissau. Turiense in the middle of the pack, but they're only a few wins away from getting closer to the top six. And then everything wraps up on Monday with a battle in the north between Penafiel and FC Porto B. FC Porto B, usually every year they're toward the bottom, but this year they're in sixth place, and Benfica B, which is usually near the top, is struggling in the 11th place. So very interesting how that works out. And by the way, people ask me about Sporting's B team. They're playing in the third division. If you remember, I think they got relegated, I think like 4 or 5 years ago. I get asked about that. Where is Sporting's team in the second division? Well, they're in the third division, and they haven't managed to get themselves promoted these last few years to the second division. But to me, the best match, I think, this weekend is probably Estrela Amadora. The second-place team will be traveling to beautiful Covilha, one of the few places where it snows. You're probably saying, why am I picking the second-place team against the 17th-place team? Well, I'm doing that for the simple reason that Covilha has been playing a little bit better lately, and Estrela Amadora has put together a lot of good results, and this is the one that really sticks out for me. I mean, Penafiel, FC Porto B, that's also a good match between the 6th and 8th place teams. But Estrela Amadora is still keeping their hopes alive to try to catch, even though they're 13 points behind Moreirense. I don't think they will. And I think I really like this battle at the bottom, especially with Bissau, Covilha, and Trofense. And I think the teams at the bottom are a little bit more desperate than the teams at the top. Coming up next, more Liga B-Win talk, as well as the Women's Report, coming up here on part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back. Just a friendly reminder, if you're listening to this for the first time, please give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music. Also put up the audio on YouTube. And it's pretty much in most places where you need to find us, except for maybe one or two places. And people always say, well, how can I support you? Well, it's very simple. Give a listen to whatever platform and follow the PortugueseSoccer.com, whatever social media or podcast platform you listen to. That would be much appreciated. And don't forget to leave a positive comment as well. That would be highly appreciated as well. Let's talk about Liga Women's Football. Look, it was a big weekend for the women in terms of the Derby and the Luge. I'm so glad to see these last few years that they're playing these big matches in the, obviously, the big Euro 2004 stadiums. But Benfica this weekend, first off, they lost at home to Sporting. So both Sporting and Braga won this weekend, Sporting beating Benfica in the Luge. And they've managed to cut their deficit to Benfica with to 9 points. Benfica with 48 points, Braga and Sporting with 39 each. Benfica only needs, as I've been told, 6 points to win and become champions. So even though they dropped it, they are still in good position, 9-point lead. Women's football last week, by the way, we had some interesting results last week. Turriens lost to Braga 6-3. And we had Damiens playing Club de Albergaria 3-3. So there was a lot of goals last week. Amora, the last place team, 6 points, minus 53 goal differential. They lost last week at Maritimo. Maritimo came into town and beat Amora 3-0. So, and by the way, now they're on break. They don't play again until April, the weekend of April the 16th. But Benfica, again, in total control. Braga and Sporting are tied for a second place. But I think, unless something really drastic happens, I just don't see Benfica, who, by the way, has a plus 73 goal differential in the first division. I just do not see them losing anything. I just really don't. I just don't see it. Let's talk a little bit. And look, it's March. We're starting to see with the newspapers rumors of clubs being interested. Record had a very interesting rumor that St. Just, who did so well against Arsenal, that apparently Liverpool is looking at him. We saw reports of Bellerin. Apparently he is now not going to be brought back next year. Apparently Amorim wants a player with a different characteristic, a little bit more attacking, I think is what I read. But apparently Bellerin apparently now is not going to be returning next year. Diomond, the center back that they just got from second division Mafra, from his club in Denmark. Medellin, he's already also getting a lot of interest. The kid's only been with the team, 2 months? And he's already getting a lot of interest. And then another kid that's been getting interest was linked with Sporting. Sporting denied it. And now he's being linked with Benfica. And that's Casapia left back Lelu. I would not be surprised, L-E-L-O, if he gets mentioned in the rumor mill with Benfica, especially with reports that Benfica has decided that they're not going to be able to renew with Grimaldo and they're going to move on. They're looking at already at a few players in Holland. But it's beginning. And by the way, let me tell you one thing. You got to give the agents of a lot of these players a lot of credit, because I spoke to a few people and a lot of them say that the clubs don't really, or most of the time, they don't really tip off the newspaper sometimes when a club inquires about a player or they show up to watch a match in the press box. It's really the agents that are working with the press to put this into the newspaper. And I'll tell you what, if I'm the agent for Diamond, if I'm the agent for St. Just, if I'm the agent for this left back at Casapia Lelu, if I'm the agent for Guedes, I mean, the amount of players, in another one I'm going to talk about in a minute, Gugu or Rio Ave, these are the ones that you're starting to hear about and that are going to be in the news. And I've always been of the belief that the agents are the ones that are dropping to this press, because let's be honest with you, if you work at a newspaper and you hear an agent call, you know you're going to pick up the phone. They won't pick up a phone for anybody else, but they'll pick up the phone for an agent because sometimes that's the front cover that they're going to need, that news segment. But we're starting to see that now. The transfer window, it usually starts around March. I said this back in January. I said, watch in late March, you start to see the covers, especially after the international break, with all the big news about the players that are getting interest from clubs that are in Portugal. And look, it's already happening in March. We'll see everything go back to being mostly Liga in April, and then watch toward the end of May how everything starts to take off again, right on schedule like I predicted it. Let's go through some news. First of all, we'll start with Porto. This is an incredible thing that Evan Nielsen has been injured 5 times this season. That is an amazing thing, and it makes you worry about his durability. I mean, if you remember, I think at one point, a lot of people thought it was rubbish. He was even linked at one point with Manchester United. But I think he's done some damage, because if you've been hurt 5 times and you don't have the wear and tear as a striker to be playing more, I think this is going to hurt him. And he needs a very good rest of the season to, I think, get some attention, because 5 injuries is a lot, folks. And Porto's been in the news with Guga of Rio Ave. He's a midfielder, came up through the Benfica ranks, then went on to, I think it was Famalicão, and now he's at Rio Ave. And apparently now he's been getting a lot of attention with Porto. He's property of Benfica. Benfica own a percentage of his economic rights. What's interesting is that if Porto make a move to get him, some of that money will have to go to Benfica, which means they're going to be giving some of the money to their rival. So I'm pretty sure, by the way, Porto knows about this, but if they want Guga, they're going to get him. And interestingly, we'll see how Guga does this weekend against Benfica. This is one of those matches when your name is in the press, and now you're going to be playing a big three. Guess what? It's a dress rehearsal to show that you're ready to make that big move. So Porto has been linked with Guga of Rio Ave, again, a good young player. And we'll be curious to see how this news develops. I already told you about Sporting. Benfica, the big thing with Benfica, there's been a lot of talk about Rui Costa wanting to renew with Roger Schmidt. I'm going to repeat what I said. And if you're brand new, you're hearing it for the first time. But if you aren't, you're probably getting tired of me saying this. Look, if Roger Schmidt gets Benfica to the semifinals, and I think they have a good shot. Just like Inter thinks they have a good shot, I think Benfica has a good shot. This is our best shot at making it to the semifinals for a Portuguese team in many, many years with the draw we got. But with Benfica, Schmidt, he takes them to the semis, and I'll be honest with you, no matter. First off, if Schmidt does not do anything to renew, pay attention. If Schmidt does not do anything to renew in the next few months, it's because he knows his chances of leaving are very good, to a bigger club, that is. And why would you renew and raise your release clause if that's something you would want to entertain next year, moving on to manage one of the bigger clubs in Europe? Because that's the way it works in Portugal with players and manager. So if you're Schmidt, why would you want to renew, especially if you have an opportunity, especially if you take Benfica to the semifinals of the Champions League? You're going to get interest from a big European club. That's just the way it goes. There's nothing you can do. So if he does renew like Rui Costa wants him to do before the Clásico, then I'm wrong. We know the guy genuinely wants to stay in Portugal with Benfica. But if he doesn't and this drags out, and by the way, how many times in the newspaper is going to drag this out, then you know that he knows that he's got an opportunity to move on. And I think it's saw one report that says 7.5 million. There was another one for 9. Look, the only people that know are the agents, the club, and the president. They are the only ones that know. But 7.5 million for a big club in Europe is not a lot of money if you can get a great manager like Roger Schmidt. And if I'm Rui Costa, and I'm pretty sure he's already done it, you got to start thinking about who you're going to be bringing in after Roger Schmidt. But pay attention to see if, in fact, Roger Schmidt does renew this week, or if it drags. If it drags, then you know he's starting to think about his future. Again, that's just my opinion. There was news, by the way, with Gonçalo Guedes that Benfica wants him to come back next year. I think that would be a great move. So we'll see if that happens. You know, I think he's still property of Wolves. Not sure how much playing time he's going to get if he goes back. Hey, if you're on a club that has a possibility of going to the Champions League, that's certainly a much better situation than if you were playing at Wolves, if you ask me, with all due respect to all the great Wolves fans that follow this account. And then, of course, we know that Grimaldo, that's been talked about forever, but it looks like he'll be moving on this summer on a free. As we wrap up this episode, a few other small things. JJ, Jorge Jesus, was linked with Brazil this week, reportedly. You know, someone came to Portugal to talk to him. You know, JJ to Brazil, I think it's possible. He's at, you know, he's in Turkey now. He's going to make a decision about his future. I think he only has a one-year contract in Turkey. I think, regardless, he's going to be leaving Turkey to find another bigger opportunity in Europe. Don't be surprised in May if we hear him being linked with some big jobs in Europe, only because they have great agents, and the agents are, you know, if they call up, they will pick up, and they will put it on the front cover. So don't be surprised if something like that happens. But you know what? I like JJ with the Brazilian national team. A lot of Brazilians respect JJ for what he did at Flamengo. So I'll be very curious to see if, in fact, that happens. But, you know, we'll see if that has happened this summer. If you're asking me today, do I think it's going to happen? I think it's possible. But ultimately, I still think AJ is going to stay in Europe and manage another club. Fernando Santos started off in a very ugly way, losing 3-1 to the Czech Republic. A team, by the way, he knew very well from the Nations League, by the way. There's some criticism. I mean, they beat the Czech Republic twice, Portugal did, in the Nations League recently. And now he goes to Poland and they lose. You thought he would have been better prepared. But he did bounce back and beat Albania 1-0. Slim 1-0 win. Not necessarily the greatest, but you know, I think if you're Poland right now, I don't know. We're happy with Roberto Martinez. I don't know if you're in Poland, if you're just as happy with Fernando Santos, but he does deserve an opportunity to, in my opinion, he does deserve an opportunity to, you know, to see if it's going to work in Poland. Let me wrap up this episode, and again, thank you for listening. My team in the fifth tier is Athletico dos Arcos, and very big disappointment last week. First off, we drew at Castelhanos 2-2. Castelhanos is the team that the week before drew with the first place team, Limianos. So the 14th place team in our group last week drew with Limianos, the first place team, and then they drew with my club 2-2, and they took points away from my club and Limianos. And unfortunately, Atletico do Arcos remains now 4 points behind first place Limianos with about 8 matches left. I was very disappointed when I saw the result. And give credit to this club, Castelhanos. They are playing to stay up. And by the way, there is 2 divisions in the Viana do Castelo region, believe it or not. So yes, you could get relegated. And this club in the 14th division, the bottom 4 get relegated. They're standing in 14th place. They are above the relegation line, and give them a lot of credit. But Atletico do Arcos, tough, tough result this past weekend, drawing 2-2 at Limianos. This weekend, Atletico dos Arcos will be playing at home against Uturiense. No, not from Torres Vedras. They are a club in the relegation zone. And Limianos, they will be playing ADC Correia, which is a 9th-place team. So maybe we can get lucky in ADC Correia, which is a middle-of-the-pack team, maybe at home. They can take points away from Limianos, and we could win at home. Maybe we can inject some hope with about 8 matches left. But last week, we really blew the opportunity. I just don't think we could afford to drop any more points, you know, in my opinion. So here we go again this weekend. Good luck to the boys playing Uturiense. Anyway, folks, that wraps up episode 164 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Again, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict. It's also on YouTube, Amazon Music. And again, thank you for all your support. Don't forget to follow PortugueseSoccer.com, the website. Starting this weekend, there will be some new stuff you'll see on it in terms of stories. Let's also remind you, you know, PSoccerCom at Twitter, which, by the way, I love Twitter, but man, Elon Musk, more and more he disappoints me. Don't forget PSoccer.com, PSoccerCom as well on Facebook. And, of course, our partner, Portuguese_soccer_noticias on Instagram. Folks, that wraps up episode 164. As I always say to you sincerely, and I mean it, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your families. And I'll talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.